Welcome to the Internet Advisor Podcast. I'm your host and producer, Foster Brown. Along with my co-host, Gary Baker, and our team of experts, we've been helping people like you since 1998 with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources, and promoting tech enterprise throughout Michigan. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour podcast recorded every week at the studios of historic WJR Radio in Detroit. Both hours of the show are available each week on this podcast and are streamed to our affiliates across the state of Michigan. We're also proud to be part of Detroit's newest and fastest-growing podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. And now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
You're very welcome aboard the show. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the Internet Advisor, along with Gary Baker, Ed Riddell, Cal Carson, Kasten Thomas, and, well, we've even got Mr. Rick Broida in studio with us. That's right, the Cheapskate is here with us himself. And we're going to be wrapping up our celebration of 20 years here at WJR, our flagship station, with a lot of memories. And that's all coming up in this part of the program, so stay around. Well, I think this is shaping up to be a program that's going to be more fun than a barrel full of monkeys, because I got all sorts of great guys in studio with me here right now. And as I said at the beginning of the program, this podcast forms the fourth in our programs where we've been celebrating 20 years on our flagship station, say that twice quickly, here at WJR Radio in Detroit. But we're being heard on our podcasts, and also in our radio affiliates at the Michigan Talk Radio Network. So welcome to all of you, and thank you for being with us. We have a very special in-studio guest with us, and I'll be introducing him in just a moment. And the regular crew is here. Cal Carson, good to have you back off ice.
I tell you, it's good to get to a place where it's nice and warm. I do enjoy what I do, but it's really nicer when it's warmer.
And what you do is to handle the electronics for some of the ice competition, the dance, ice dancing competition.
Right? I am a USFSA technical accountant, and I handle the equipment that we use for the international judging system, similar to the same system that they use during the Olympics.
Oh, wow.
And so that's what I do for United States figure skating.
Oh, wow. So you wear a parka and run cable.
Sometimes they let me wear the parka. But lots of cable running.
Oh, yes. And that's Ed Riddell, who's also here. And Kasten Thomas is next to him as well, part of our crew.
Peachy to be here.
Good to have you here as well. And Mr. Rick Broida. Good
it's
to
me.
Have you, the cheapskate, is with us in
I'm
the
here.
House.
America's answer, and no one knows what the question is.
Take it.
Now, did you introduce Gary Baker? Because I can
we're
see him on the
get
video
to him.
Feed.
Okay. Yes, yes. A good, matter of fact, a great video feed down in Florida.
Yuck.
Gary, welcome aboard. It's good to have you here.
Well, it's great to be here. And boy, have times changed in the last 20 years.
Oh,
when
my.
When we first got on, I had my flip phone and my personal digital assistant and
oh, yes.
Wow. Life couldn't get any better.
Hey, and you know, when you first started out, Gary, and this is a good, maybe this is one of the things we can start with, anchor here. You were one of the internet providing pioneers in this area, were you not?
Yes, we started online tech in my living room, and that was the very first internet service company for business in Michigan.
Wow. And BizServe was, I think, the service that I use. Am I right?
Right. It was one of our products.
Okay. And that's how you and I connected, because I was having some challenges. And we got together on the air on my show, which was a great weekend show on WJR in 1998. And well, one thing led to one. Pardon me?
And actually, that was in 97.
That's right.
Right?
That's
and,
right.
Well, in 96, we got together first, and we started the show in We started at 97. You're right. And then we started in 98. We started the show.
That's yeah,
right.
The official launch was the beginning of February 1998. And that's what we just celebrated the beginning of this month as well, live on WJR. But you were there for the very unveiling of it. Go ahead.
And it was 97, actually, now that I think of it. 1997. We should not we're old guys, right? So we can't remember stuff. That's one thing we shouldn't not remember, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, yeah, it was fun back then, and even more fun today. I've been trying to come up with different slices of technology for the first segment here. And,
oh, yeah.
And I have been watching iOS 11.2.6 roll out this week. And I understand you downloaded and installed that.
Today, as a matter of fact. Now, I was saying to you offline that I had some battery problems, and Cal, you can chime in on this. I'm hoping that it solves them, but was this the one that was to cure that character?
Yeah, this one was for curing that character problem, that Indian character, that if you put it just the one in there, it would lock up your phone, that type of situation. That was the primary push for 11.2.6.
Okay. So how about the battery issue? I seem to be having a lot of issues with my battery running down quickly.
Well, the battery thing, if I'm not mistaken, they put out, I think that's going to be in 11.3, which is the beta, currently right now. And then when it comes out, you'll be able to do your own adjustments for your battery power. And there's a hand in the rear.
Can I just chime in for a second?
Yes.
You know, Gary. Hi, Gary. I just want to say hi. I didn't get a chance to say hello. You know how I'm always ripping on Microsoft? Well, it's Apple's turn.
Oh,
because
yes.
Because Apple has become the new Microsoft.
Oh, yeah.
iOS 11 is such a wreck. It is so bug-ridden, it is so user-hostile, and full of ridiculous things that don't work right. How many updates is this since iOS 11 rolled out
Five.
To fix things that should never have been broken?
Yeah.
That's all. Okay, I feel better
Can
now.
I get a rant? Can I get a rant out there?
Slash rant. It's over.
No,
no. This would be where Brian Tong would be saying,
Bad Apple.
Yeah, for those of you who watch CNET, he is a great comment. He says, Bad Apple. Because it's been a bad year.
Yeah, 11 just rolled out in December, and now, or 11.2, and now we've got 11.2.6 rolling out to fix the problems in 5. It actually made them worse and caused more problems.
Yeah.
So if you thought your battery life was short before.
Never mind the whole slowdown thing. You guys probably talked about that, but.
Yeah.
You know,
heavy battery drain, AirPlay issues. Touch ID problems, abnormal amounts of lag time. For the X, for the iPhone X, incoming call delays, sometimes you can't open your screen for about 10 seconds, so you can't even answer the phone.
Ouch.
It was supposed to. So they did. Here's how they fixed the battery problem. You know the battery indicator?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's missing on half of the phone.
Sure.
After you've upgraded to 11.2.6.
Doesn't this sound
as
like...
Long as, you can't see, as long as you can't see that it's going down like crazy, then, you know...
Yeah, you're going to feel better. Yeah. You're right. This is the Microsoft.
Sounds like Microsoft.
It's like Microsoft.
Yeah. But here's the part that I'm really waiting for. Did you take your phone back in and go get an Android yet? Did you go in and get your Android yet, Gary?
No. Gary,
you know what? It's,
well, that's
it's
because
coming.
We paid so much damn money for them.
Yeah, but if you're getting it through a provider, you can just trade it in.
Well, hey, listen, on that rant, we got to take a quick break here when we come back on the other side. We can continue this maybe. So glad to have you aboard the rant machine. Oh my goodness, Gary, you really uncorked something there in this last segment.
Well, normally, you know, my name is Gary Baker. Sometimes they call me Gary Bader because I bait Cal, but this time it was Rick Breida.
Oh my, yes. And Cal is uncharacteristically quiet. It has been a kind of a wreck of a year in some ways for Apple, but they're focusing on their quality. They've got to. They've simply got to. Because the old mantra that it just works ain't necessarily
Fake news.
Well, You know, chances are, if Steve was still alive, this whole thing wouldn't be happening.
I agree.
Are you sure?
I agree.
Oh, without a doubt.
Oh, agree.
He wouldn't have allowed it. He would have browbeat enough people that it wouldn't have happened this way, but
it wouldn't have happened twice.
Oh, you mean the product simply wouldn't have gotten out?
I just think that, you know, he ran a tight ship, and I think without him there, and by all accounts, he was a nasty guy and not pleasant to be around, but he got things done, and I don't think they would have let this slide.
Hey, we brought you in here for a happier note to talk about gadgets and also to reflect on the past 20 years. You've been around and seen a lot of gadgets, but you know what? We ought to let people who maybe don't know you that well, Rick Broida, talk about the extent to which you are all over online right now, not just as a cheapskate, but you're a special columnist for ZDNet, I saw the other day, for their finance to business.
Well, I'm just kind of taking the cheapskate thing and extended it out to business. So I started writing a new blog for ZDNet called the Business Bargain Hunter, and you can put that hyphen wherever you want. It could be Business Bargain Hunter or Business Bargain Hunter. Works both ways. And so that's just like more, you know, stuff for business users and for SMB market and stuff like that. So Gary, I hope you will subscribe to the Business Bargain Hunter.
I am so in.
And yeah, you know, I dip my toes wherever they will allow me.
But seriously, you're on a lot of other sites as well on a regular basis too, aren't you, writing?
Not a ton. I do CNET and I do ZDNet and like a little bit for Computer World here.
That's
and there.
Computer World is the other place that I saw you, right?
It's funny you mentioned, you know, we're talking about the history. You know, when I started out as a freelance writer in the late 90s, around the 2000s, everything, I had more writing work than I knew what to do with. I mean, I was turning down work. I couldn't handle the volume of it.
Really?
You probably also had more magazines and publications.
My gosh.
What were you, like, Byte? You had Computer World? You had MacWorld?
I buried so many computer magazines.
Them,
Oh, my gosh. I mean, seriously, I wrote for probably 10 to 12 magazines regularly at that time, and almost overnight, they just disappeared. Around 2000, 2001, the bubble burst, and it was, for someone like me, it was a wreck, because all of a sudden I went from having too much work to nowhere near enough.
Yikes.
And it was only by kind of segueing into blogging that I managed to kind of survive it.
So
and
you were in the first wave of blogging, huh?
So do you guys know Lifehacker? Do you know the site Lifehacker?
Yes.
Was one of the first blogs to really hit it big as kind of a thing, you know? And so I actually wrote for Lifehacker for about 6 months and kind of cut my teeth there on the whole, because it was such a different animal writing these little short things that would just kind of go, you know, disappear and then kind of disappear, versus writing magazine articles, which is just a different animal. But it was a good learning experience, but boy, was it tough work.
Yeah, you must have been busier than heck, because I remember every week I would get MacWorld and PC Magazine, and those suckers would be almost 100 pages. Now, mind you, most of it was advertising.
Yes.
But it's still, that was a lot of stuff to write on a regular basis.
PC Magazine used to be twice a month, you know? And so, in that respect, the industry has changed dramatically. The publishing side of it has gone almost entirely away from paper and print to everything being online, and to its detriment, I think, because there's now so much, and there's just no barrier to entry that anybody who wants to say anything, whether it's doing product reviews or news or fake news or whatever, can have a voice, which is good, but it's also not good. You know, that's where we are.
Have you guys, the experience I'm having too is I'm having a hard time. There's so much content out there. I try to squirrel it away to look at later on, and inevitably I don't get a chance to.
What do you use to do that? Like, how do you
Evernote?
You use Evernote.
I use Evernote.
I use something called Pocket.
I've heard of it.
Okay, so Pocket is just like a little bookmarklet that you put in your browser, and it's like, oh, I want to read this Wired article, or I want to read the CNET article. But I don't have time later. One click, boom, then you open it up. Open up Pocket on your phone or your tablet, and it's there. It's all nicely formatted, and it's just click and done.
I'm finding I don't have the time even to go back to them.
I would tell you that the old school writers like Rick and some of the other ones out there, the quality of the writing has gone away. Just like the quality of photographs gone away, because there's too much of it.
Yeah.
And so folks don't really care about the quality. I don't even think they get edited. Actually, I mean, it's like, here's your blog spot,
too.
Just drop it out there,
when you're the writer, editor, publisher.
Yeah, you're right. There's very little. I wonder if the schools of journalism still have people in the seats.
I think they do. I just think that they're having to teach a very different
very
curriculum.
Different kind of
and they're trying to catch up with the advances that are happening so quickly.
Yeah. It's great for college students, for kids who are coming up and wanting to get involved in this because they can. You know, and again, the barriers are not there. Gary, your kids, right, are what are they doing media-wise? They're doing something?
Video. It's all going to video these days.
So, right.
And I was going to ask you, what's the next 5 minutes bring?
Good question, huh?
You know, and they're looking at video more. They're creating video.
Yep.
It's remarkable that how good some of them are getting and how easy some of the video editing is getting. It's almost like flying
That's
a drone
true.
Today. When we first started flying drones, you had to fly them. Now you could throw them in the air and they hover until you get ready to move them.
You're talking about my thing.
There you go.
But isn't it true that the video editing has gotten so good, it kind of anticipates what you want, and you really have to kind of go in and manually do some of the editing. Otherwise, it edits for you.
Yeah, no, the tools that are available now are remarkable. The cost is remarkable because a lot of times there is no cost. So anybody who wants to blog, who wants to podcast, who wants to do videos, any of that stuff can do it for cheap or free and make a good product. You look at what's happening in podcasting right now. Some of the podcasts that have come along from people who have really very little experience but have suddenly made names for themselves doing some good work. And that's remarkable.
Give me
I think
an example.
It's wonderful. So there's a podcast now called Atlanta Monster, which is about the Atlanta child killings of the 70s, which is terrible subject matter. It's really deeply disturbing. But there's this really fascinating, if you're into true crime, fascinating podcast. The guy who put it together, when you listen to him do his voiceover, he's not good. I mean, he has a really bad voice for it. He doesn't structure it very well. But the material is good, and he's obviously done the work to tell a very compelling story.
Yeah. And are there any particular podcasts that really, you know, hold your attention anymore?
No, not at all. No, none.
Not even ours?
No.
Well, except for that good Battlestar Galactica podcast.
Yeah, you know, I did listen to a few of those episodes.
Of course, you have to remember, Ed is too busy using YouTube. YouTube is where Ed lives, correct?
No, I don't live on the YouTube.
Oh, sure.
No, I do. I use YouTube for instructional videos on, you know, how to drop a transmission, stuff like that, how to repair a dishwasher.
Once again, when are you not eating?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Carson, how about you? I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I'm just looking at the list on my phone. One of the things that's been really on my mind is just becoming a better husband, and I found five or six different podcasts on relationships and improving your marriage.
Oh, cool.
And you know, I've got a real honey for a sweetheart, so I got to do everything I can to keep her.
Oh gosh.
I'm already a perfect husband, so I don't really relate. But there's so many
start a podcast.
So many great podcasts.
I tell you what, we're coming up to a break in just a little bit, but on the other side of that, I want you to talk about some of the gadgets, because you've covered gadgets now for a while.
Long time.
And I have a key question for you that I'm going to ask. And then I also want to find out, by the way, folks, we're not letting him get out of here without one of his incredible bargains. And we'll get that before we leave this hour. So please do stick around for that. Coming up on the Internet Advisor as we're coasting here to this break. And on the other side of Rick Broida back again, we're going to be talking about some of the gadgets that he's covering and also some of the bargains that he's unearthed in his quest. And that is why we won't have a camera in the studio. A wild conga line going on here all the way from Florida to Detroit. Hey, welcome back. Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker and the rest of the crew here. Rick Broida is our guest, the cheapskate. But also, Rick, you were our gadget guy. And through the times that we've had you on, that's why I wanted to have you in here. You have brought us some fascinating gadgets. I'll never forget that little drone that you unleashed in the studio. We took a video of it and posted that, and all sorts of people have loved watching that. That was such a hoot. So here's my question for you before we get to talk about the gadgets you got now. In the last 20 years, what do you think was the single most significant invention, device, system, you name it, that has happened. If you've got more than one, fire away.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think there's a couple of obvious choices. One is, of course, the internet. Internet has literally transformed.
Let's use that as a given.
Yeah, yeah, that's a given. Okay, so, so I want to say it's the iPhone, because it was really the phone that made the smartphone industry as we know it today. But I'm gonna go back before that, and I'm going to say it was the Palm Pilot, because the Palm Pilot did give us the iPhone. I believe that. And just as long as we're talking history here, when the Palm Pilot made its debut in 1996, this is a little known history about Rick the Cheapskate Broida. about 8 months after it came out, I started a magazine for Palm Pilot users, which was called Tap, because you tapped on the screen.
Sure.
And it later became something called Handheld Computing, and it was it's an actual honest to goodness real magazine.
Oh, cool.
And so I was, of course I was very vested in Palm, and I was very excited to see how the product was going to evolve. And eventually Microsoft got in the game and ruined it with the Pocket PC. And then it kind of seemed like the whole PDA thing was stagnating, and smartphones were just sort of starting to come into play.
Well, it got replaced by the BlackBerry, and people didn't want to carry two devices.
That is true. BlackBerry came in and had a lot of success for a little while. But then when Apple got into the game, everything changed. Changed.
How many of you carried a Trio? How many of you had a Trio?
For a little while.
You had a Trio for a little while.
Yeah.
I had a handspring visor, which was the Palm.
Yeah. I think all of us. Did you cast it?
No, I just went from the Palm Pilot to the BlackBerry.
Oh, okay, to the BlackBerry. I was, and I see most of us in here the same thing. Graduated eventually to the Trio, which had a wonderful little keyboard on it, and you also had a screen that you could touch as well. It was incredible.
Oh, yeah. That was Palm Pilot became
phone. So what was it that the iPhone did that made this incredible sea change?
Well, it was, for the design of it, it was all screen. It was no keyboard, which was, of course, a huge deal. And everybody thought, oh, I can't use an on-screen keyboard. Mm-hmm. I can't. I won't. And now we all do.
I will not.
Right. And then the apps, which, again, this was something that Palm had pioneered with its, what were they called?
Not widgets.
Web clips or something like that. Something like that. And then Apple came along with their apps, and then the App Store, and the floodgates just...
I think the other thing to add on to what Rick is saying that Apple did is that they took three of the most popular tools and joined them into one. They put the iPods, which were for music entertainment. They put the cell phone, and they gave you the ability to use the internet all in one piece.
And that was a huge jump.
That's exactly what I was going to say. When they combined all the pod, the MP3 players, with the iTunes store, and they included it in a cell phone, that was the breaker right there. That's
Yeah, cast me guess.
Yeah, I think it was iOS version 3. You had to go to 1 and 2 that did not have the apps in the App Store, and that's when it really took off, was when they opened it up to the third-party players.
Gary, I was looking for your opinion here.
Yeah, I went right to the BlackBerry as well, and as soon as I could get off of the BlackBerry, I did. I waited until 3... in iOS 3, because that's when, it started to become secure. Apple did not have a secure phone until then.
Mm.
And so that was, that was a big deal. And as soon as it became secure, then that it was made it easy. And it's a great phone. And to Cal's point, even though I complain about it, and I don't actually complain, I watch. I'm still back on 11.2.1. And you installed 11.2.6.
Yeah.
I refuse to go up because the problems that 5 created and then 6, they were fixed some and created some others.
Yeah.
I just wanted to wait till it settles down.
Yeah.
And that was the nice thing about the BlackBerry. It didn't come out with very many new features. Once you had one, you had one. But it was stable. And I think that's why the business... environment, all the business users got on the BlackBerry.
And they hung on to it. They hung on to it for a long time.
Too long, probably.
I think that's the other reason why the demise of the BlackBerry, because stability comes with slow movement.
That's true.
And when you start moving fast, you get changes and you get innovation, but it comes at a price.
Yep. Yep, it does. Rick, I want to make sure we talk about some of the gadgets that you have covered as well.
Yeah.
And you have some new ones now.
Well, I have some new ones. I mean, you want to talk, you know, some past or present or...
Can you stick around for the second hour?
I can stick around for a bit, yeah.
For a bit? Okay, you know, maybe we'll continue. But go ahead. Let's take... Because I want to give you plenty of time
to
talk.
Yeah, well, so let's talk about something I haven't actually written about yet. It's going to be... I'm going to be writing it this week. But you guys all see my Apple Watch here on my wrist, right? Aha! It's not an Apple Watch.
Well,
no.
I knew that right off the bat.
Well,
looking
you're
at
sitting
it.
Close. You're sitting close. You can tell.
I thought it was an Apple Watch.
Well, it looks like one from this angle. It's the same shape, same size, roughly.
And it does the same thing of turning the
face
on. But
the crown's in the wrong place.
Exactly. Oh, crown schmown.
Did you buy it? Did you buy it from a guy who opened up his trunk and said, "Hey, buddy, come over here"?
Well. Yeah, there's a couple Chinese sites that work exactly like that, actually.
I bet they are.
Yeah. Yeah, so this a few weeks ago, a couple of websites picked up on this story of this Apple Watch clone does everything for $80, does all the same things for $80.
What?
And, of course, I was intrigued immediately because I am the cheapskate. And so this watch is called the Amazfit Bip, which just makes me giggle. It's called the Bip. And it's from a Chinese company called, I can't even say it without butchering it. I want to say like Xiaomi, something like that.
Okay.
And anyway.
Oh, that X-A-O-I-M-I?
X-I-A-M-I, yeah.
Yeah, something. Xiaomi, yeah.
Okay, well, there you go.
Wow, sounds, I'm impressed.
Oh, that sounds good.
I can make it sound good. I don't know if that's right.
You know, considering no one in this room speaks Chinese, you can say,
get away with it.
You could have said Chow Mein and it would have been just as right.
All right, you guys.
So I went and I said, well, I got to check this out. If it's supposedly as capable as an Apple Watch and looks like the Apple Watch, but it's only $80, I'm going to get one. I'm going to check it out. So I've been wearing it for 2 days now, and it's actually much closer to a Pebble. You guys remember the Pebble?
Yeah, quite well.
Of blessed memory. just in terms of it's kind of plasticky looking, and the screen is not nearly as bright as an Apple Watch, but it is color. But it has a lot of the functions of the Apple Watch. It has GPS. It has a heart rate monitor. It has, you know, different watch faces you can choose from. It does notifications. You know, it ticks a lot of the big boxes.
Does it run the same applications that the iOS system
No,
runs?
It's not. It's agnostic that way. And again, it's like Pebble that way. And in fact, it doesn't do really apps at all, which I think are stupid on a watch. I don't need apps on a watch. I need it to keep track of my running, and I need it to give me notifications and just all those other basic things. That's for me.
Sure.
So overall, I'm liking this a lot. And
functionally, it does.
Functionally, it does what I need it to do. It's very light. Oh, I forgot the biggest thing of all.
What's the biggest thing?
The battery will last for up to 45 days.
No.
Oh, so
yes.
That's not Apple-like at all.
No. Instead of having to charge it every night, you can charge it once a month. Okay? That's a big deal.
Wow.
So it has one stupid flaw.
Uh-oh.
So when you notice I have an analog watch
face. Has your hand turned
a
certain color?
No, my and your wrist turns great. You notice I have an analog watch face on here right now.
Yeah.
If you have a digital watch face, it won't do 12-hour time. It will only show 24-hour time.
Oh, really?
And there's no setting. There's no way to change it that I have found yet. So, like, the stupid thing they can fix very easily. But at the moment, that's...
And to be honest with you, the rest of the world, to a great extent, runs on 24 hours.
Absolutely they do. But
can you answer your phone on your watch?
No, I can't answer my phone. I can't respond to text messages or whatever. It's very basic in that way.
Yep.
But it's very rare that I do that anyway on the Apple Watch.
I do that a lot. I've learned to do that a lot.
Yeah.
So does it pair with your phone at all?
Oh, yeah. It definitely does. Pairs with iOS or Android. It's a one-way thing. It sucks up info from... Well, no, excuse me. It does sync data back to the phone because it also tracks your steps and your heart rate.
Gotcha.
But it doesn't let you reply or make outgoing calls.
Does it work with the iHealth?
It does. It actually will link up with the health app on the phone.
Okay.
Yeah.
That
so
is
it's
fantastic.
For $80. And actually, I'm going to be having a deal coming up soon that's less.
Well, I tell you what, now you are going to have to wait for the second hour, all right? Well, in the second hour, we're going to do what we don't call a tech roundtable. And Rick was going to kind of scoot out of here now. He's going to stick around, and we're going to talk for a little while at least in that second hour with him about some more of the gadgets that he's found and also some bargains. Matter of fact, we'll see if we can sneak out of the hour, this hour, with one of those bargains. Coming up next, Mike Brennan and MI Tech News here on the Internet Advisor.
It's that time of the program when we check in with Mr. Mike Brennan, who is the editor of MI Tech News. That's a biweekly? I think, is it
24/7
That's true.
The newsletters go out biweekly, yes.
Yes, but it's 24/7. You're on top of the news there. Mike Brennan, thank you so much for joining us again. Good to have you with us, guy.
Thank you. Always a pleasure. Even on a dreary Michigan day, right?
Hey, you know what brightened this up? Rick Broider was telling us earlier on about his career as a writer. Now, he's a few years younger than you are, and that we are here. But in any case...
You're being gentle there, Foster,
yeah,
he was
talking about being a writer in the late 90s for tech and how that all kind of blew up. But I was thinking of the times you've talked about being a writer for, like, the free press for, if you will, traditional press. And it was fascinating to me, Rick, how that kind of paralleled your experience like a generation later on.
For sure.
Mike?
Well, I was in the newspaper business actually for 20 years, and then the business began to melt away below my feet. So that's being a technology writer, I actually warned the free press. I said, look, we can't be just newspaper people anymore. There's a big change coming. And they thought I was a heretic, right?
Oh,
so,
dear.
And so I did my own thing, but almost 18 years now. It's been a roller coaster ride, as you know, but I'm still around.
So what I find interesting, the parallel I found was that the change in the technology changed your careers, both of your careers. Not in the sense of being people who gather the information on technology, but on the way that you present it. And go ahead.
I can only speak for me, but we do it every way but print now.
Isn't that interesting?
This was something that was actually said to me by a former business partner who encouraged that when we had Pacific Rim News Service back in the 90s, he said we should arm everybody with video cameras and shoot video. But then it was impractical. You know, the technology wasn't good enough.
That's true.
But now it's a whole new world. So, I mean,
you know,
video's everything.
I will say that, how about this, guys? One of the things that has been huge, we've been talking about what's been the biggest sea change in the last 20 years in technology. I think, you know, well, Mike, I'll get back to that. But I think one of the things is the micro-miniaturization of everything that's going on right now and the ability to cram so much onto these chips so that in very small spaces, we're doing incredible amounts of computing.
I saw an ad from Radio Shack in 1992, and the caption under it said, "Everything on this ad today is provided inside an iPhone or Android."
Jeez.
Huh. Essentially, your smartphone has as much power as a supercomputer of that long ago.
Yes.
And when we went to the moon,
I think
it was like 56K or something like
that. Yeah, it's astounding.
And they pulled that off.
It's amazing when you think of how compared to now. I mean, probably some of these Raspberry Pis, those little kits.
Well, cameras. I mean, look how tiny cameras have gotten now. I mean, let alone this thing I'm holding in my hand, but like these little pinhole cameras that can be put anywhere.
Oh, and drones.
And still able to capture incredibly high-definition video.
Yeah, exactly.
That's going to change a lot going forward, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Mike, let's talk about MI Tech News is about getting these headlines to the people. Let's talk about some examples of headlines from this week. I see the first one there struck me was Governor Snyder proposing a Marshall Plan for talent to fill Michigan's STEM job shortage.
Yeah, well, you historians know the Marshall Plan was what helped bail Europe out after World War II, where Europe was devastated. And I wouldn't make quite that analogy with Michigan, but... Mm-hmm. We're still a long ways away from having an adequate workforce to fill all these 811,000 STEM jobs that we're. I mean, everybody's creating jobs. I mean, if you have those skills, you have your pick of jobs.
Yeah.
But we just don't have enough people to fill those jobs, and we can't. It's hard for us to recruit to Michigan when you're going up against California and places like that. But the cost of living here is the big edge. I mean, if you really want to have a nice life and make a good salary. If you can put up with winter, come to Michigan, right?
I've heard so many people say when we've interviewed them that it's a great place to raise a family. That's why they came back, for instance, from Silicon Valley. Okay, next one there is the agony and ecstasy in the rapidly emerging gig economy. First of all, what's the gig economy?
Well, that's where people are using smartphones and stuff like that to create a business. It's kind of like what I do. I think is what Rick does as well. I mean, it's the new economy where everyone is on their own. They're doing their own technology thing, and that's kind of the gig economy. There's a lot of facets to it. But
okay.
U of M study just came out, and, you know, it's I can speak to this. It's sometimes it's really wonderful. You do really well, and sometimes you don't. And so it's just that's the agony and the ecstasy. But if you go to the article on my website, it kind of outlines exactly personal routines, physical places, you know, things you need to do to get past the fact that typically you're sitting at a desk by yourself in a building by yourself working alone versus the old days when I was in the newspaper business and I was in the pod farm, right?
Oh, yes. Lord, yes. All right. And the last one there is, this is, and hey, Rick, this one you'll love. Self-flying drone knows where you are and where you're going. That's a little spooky.
I hope I'm pronouncing this right. Skydio, I think it is. They have a new one out called R1. Now, it's kind of on the expensive side, $2,500. But it's meant for folks who, like, do X Games stuff, or they're going skiing, and they want to have a beautiful video of them skiing. And this thing locks in on you, and it's good for a while. It'll follow you down the slopes and shoot all this photographs, video, streaming photographs of you. And, but the thing is, it tracks you everywhere. I mean, it's kind of, I'd be kind of a little, you know, uncomfortable with a video camera always following me around until it runs out of batteries, right? You know, so
that is the ultimate in narcissism, to have, like, a camera that just follows you all the time, everywhere.
Was there some guy who got himself wired up? Who was that? Jason TV or what was it? Ed, do you remember that guy? There was a fellow who hooked himself up so that every moment of his day.
Well, that seems like an early internet thing, like, you know, where people were you know, putting themselves on camera for 24 hours or more.
Yeah. So, Mike, people
tune me in for a boring channel.
That's what they called it, the boring channel.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, how can people get hold of your MI Tech News feed?
Well, I'm always online 24/7 at www.mitechnews.com. Certainly, they can go to your website and find a link there.
Yep.
I'm partnered with a gazillion other partners that also we cross-fertilize each other going back and forth. They give me stories. They promote me. I'm kind of trying to, you know, have a one-stop shop for what's going on in tech in Southeast Michigan. So where Rick does his national thing, I'm a hyper-local.
Excellent. Excellent. And that, folks, is part of a gift that he brings you every week. That's Mr. Mike Brennan, and it is MI Tech News. Mike, thanks so much for being with us again this week. Take care of yourself. Have a great week.
Thanks, Foster. Have a great weekend.
All right. That's Mr. Mike Brennan. Hey, Rick, I promised people we would get a bargain for them before the program ended, and I'm down to like a minute and a half right now, I think. You want to tease it? Yeah, we'll tease it. Let's just tell them what it's about.
Yeah, so this is actually something I think I may have mentioned the last time I was here. It was one of my favorite tech deals of 2017, and they're back with a version 2 of this product, and there's something extremely surprising about it, but I'll save that until we come back. You have to stick around.
You got to stick around for the second hour, and that's going to be here on the Internet Advisor. Foster Brown, along with the posse in the studio, and our star of the show today is none other than Rick Broyd of The Cheapskate. We'll be back to continue our coverage with Rick, and in our second hour, we're going to have our tech roundtable. We're going to kind of open things up even further and talk about all sorts of stuff. Maybe talk to Cal about some of the other things coming out from Apple, some of the news there, and some products that quite possibly could be coming out in this coming year. And we got some interesting discussion, I think, coming in this next hour. So please stick around for hour number 2 of the Internet Advisor coming up in just a moment here on the Internet Advisor podcast.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage, theinternetadvisor.net. You'll discover past podcasts, our free toolkit with software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, and many other resources. You'll also find links to mitechnews.com, our co-sponsored weekly tech and entrepreneur newsletter, edited by Mike Brennan. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact button on the homepage and send us an email with the details, And don't forget to look for us on Facebook and Twitter, and at Detroit's newest podcast network, PodcastDetroit.com. Now, let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, co-host of the program, along with Gary Baker, who is sticking with us here down in Florida, in Fort Lauderdale, I believe, right, Gary?
Yeah, that's right. Bahia Mar Marina in Fort Lauderdale.
All right, and we got just a whole bunch of guys in studio here. We are going to have fun. This is the hour for the Tech Roundtable. Rick Breida is sticking with us, and he's got that great bargain. You don't want to miss it.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
I was just telling my esteemed colleagues here that last week I had the pleasure of being on the IT and the D program. That's a podcast, actually, that the kind of the base for the Podcast Detroit system that they've got up right now. And I was invited on there by the guys to talk about our 20th anniversary, Gary. And it was a lot of fun. You've been down there. You've been on with them.
That's right. And yeah, they have a lot of fun on
show. It is a wild atmosphere. And it's kind of rubbed off on me this week, guys. So excuse me, you know, if I'm a little giddy, you know.
Is that why you got that beer? I mean, I've never seen you have a beer.
It's a root beer.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I like the new you.
Well, this is studio. This is great.
No, that's okay. You're being 16 again. I'm okay.
Well, we got a lot of great people in studio, but carrying over from this last hour, we promised he would be back here, is Mr. Rick Breida, who is officially on the internets known as the Cheapskate. We like to think of him as the gadget guy because on a regular basis, Rick has come by over the past, oh my word, how many years has it been?
I think it's almost 8 for me.
I think it is.
Yeah. He still has hair.
But it's starting to look more like your guys', unfortunately.
That's called platinum highlights.
Platinum? Is that the color?
Yes, of course.
And by the way, I resemble that remark.
Yeah, it's creeping in all over the studio here. In any case, you have been our gadget guy, too. And
it's been my pleasure.
The last hour about you're bringing in that tiny little drone and having a ball just flying around.
That was a couple
studio.
Years ago, and now they've gotten even tinier or better, and just
Heard from Mike Brennan this last hour about ones that will follow you around with a very high resolution camera.
Yeah, well, DJI announced, I think it was last month, the Mavic Air. Which is kind of like the sweet spot in between the Mavic and the Spark. So I think it's like $799, and it's just like it's a little smaller. It has the folding, not wings,
propellers or top,
But it'll follow you around and do all the fancy stuff and whatever. Uh-huh. And it's got a great camera and just like
I can't tell you how many videos I've watched on TV that I can say that's a drone shot.
Well, that's the amazing thing is that what used to require a helicopter can now be done with one of these drones.
Right. And I remember because one of my favorite shows is Alaska, The Last Frontier. And I remember and also Gold Rush. And I remember them experimenting with some of the earliest drones and they had a behind the scenes thing. These things would just go up and just like crash. Well, in 1 year's time since then, they have so many more additional shots they do with that instead of the helicopters because the technology is advanced and the battery life. Is in advance so much.
I mean, even if the darn thing costs you $6,000, that would be probably one flight of a helicopter.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I feel badly for helicopter pilots and the guys who do that kind of aerial videography.
Well, I can also say from having been a video producer, but there are some shots I would love to have had, traveling with a car or something like that, or doing what boom shots used to do.
Right.
And you could do away with all of that, the boom operators, the whole shooting match, and just have a good video, a good drone taking pictures there.
Absolutely. It's a game changer. Now,
well, you have to have a drone operator, so you're not getting rid of everybody.
Right. You're right. They're
not for long. Not for long, Cal. Well, they're going to be sentient, and they will fly where you tell them to.
Ooh, with AI.
Coming.
Oh, my goodness.
I'll wait until they get rockets mounted on them, then I'll be ready to fly one.
Skynet. From self-driving cars to self-flying drones, right?
Now,
I'm just going to turn it to Jell-O.
We've teased this, Rick. We got to do it because I know you're going to have to move on and shortly. But you've got with you, as you said in the last hour, this is the version two of something that you told us about before.
Yeah, this came around towards the end of last year, and I immediately recognized it as one of the great tech deals of the year, which it definitely was. So this is called the Wyze Cam, and that's Wyze as in W-Y-Z-E, okay. Although I think you are wise to buy it because it's a Wi-Fi camera. So it's something that you set up in your home to stream live video. So if you want to keep tabs on, say, a pet while you're away at work, or you want to use it for home security, you can set one of these little guys up. And there are a ton of these cameras. They've been around for a long time. It just connects to your Wi-Fi network, and you will stream the video to your phone or your tablet. But the remarkable thing about this little guy, which is this adorable little white cube, it looks like something that would bounce out of the beginning of a Pixar movie, is it's $20. It's $20. Not kidding.
Oh, my word.
It's $19.99 plus like $5.95 for shipping. Or I think you can get it straight from Amazon for like $30 shipped. And it works really well. It does 1080p video. It has night vision. It has two-way audio. It ticks all the boxes for, you know.
You know, if that thing was half the size, you could swallow it and do your own colonoscopy.
Well, let's see. Cal, see if you can try go the other way. See if you can.
This is really great. Now, I got a phone that has a Wi-Fi hotspot on it. So if I turn on the Wi-Fi hotspot, connect to this, I can automatically get a stream.
If that's connected to Wi-Fi elsewhere,
okay.
You stream to, yeah. So this is intended for home use.
Okay.
So amazing, right? $20 for this thing.
Yeah.
So my thinking was like, okay, well, this company is going to do this loss leader first product, and then the next one, they're going to jack up the price. They're going to start charging for cloud recording. I didn't even mention you get 14 days of looping cloud storage for video at no extra charge.
Wow.
No.
Yeah. So it's amazing. So I thought, okay, well, the next one, they're going to stick it to us, right? So the Wyze Cam V2 was just announced this past week. And so it's got slightly better imaging. It's got more infrared LEDs for night vision. It's got something called motion tracking, where if you set it up to do motion detection, it will automatically kind of put a box around whatever
Incredible.
It's detecting. It's still only $20.
Oh,
it's still
Lord.
$20.
Folks, there it is. That is the steal, the bargain of a lifetime. Rick Broida, thank you so much for being
with us.
Thank
you. My pleasure.
It's been a load of fun. I will put up the links to that, and you can get your own. Coming back in just a minute with our Tech Roundtable. Well, that was a lot of fun having Rick Broida in studio with us, and he has been, as you heard, the last 8 years, a very significant part of keeping us in touch with what's going on in terms of gadgets out there and also some great bargains. So I will post links to those two devices, the phone and to the camera. That camera deal is incredible. We're going to get a picture. Well, I can get it offline.
Yeah. You know, I was thinking, you know, that, like you said, a pet camera. But my dog's all over the house. So, I mean, I'd have to set up several of them. And then at what point do you want to, you don't want to invade privacy at your own home, you know? Because I remember the Linksys has these cameras, right?
Oh.
And
that size?
Mm-hmm. Shane has them. Remember, we were in the studio a year ago, and he has them in his kitchen. You know, that's non-obtrusive. And he goes, honey, come to the camera. I want to show the Internet Advisor team how good this camera is. And she's like, not again. You know, so she comes in there, and the dog runs by. And it was great, you know. But for $20 instead of $100.
It's all about remembering that the camera's there.
Yeah.
You know, if you remember, that's fine. Because many times I've walked in the kitchen, and I wasn't ready.
Gary?
Well, I think the technology that really has changed our life the most is having a computer in your hand. And, you know, we were slowly moving in that direction, right, with the personal digital assistants and then the BlackBerry. But it really wasn't until the iPhone made it, you know, brought it all together. Talk about the camera. Look how small that camera is in the iPhone and how good it is. And when you think about, you know, all the things that we do, for good and bad, you know, you can't get the kid's nose out of their phone, but think about how that's changed our, you know, what we do on an hourly basis, on a minute-by-minute basis, it seems like. I think that's probably the most significant.
Where do you think that's heading, Gary?
Miniaturization even more.
Yeah.
Wearables. You know, you saw Rick's, what did he call it? The Amaze Fit Bip.
Oh, yes, yes, yes.
You know, so when you start to see that, the Apple Watch is still very nice, but very expensive. When that gets down to about 80, 90 bucks, we're going to just see that whole wearable technology area just explode.
Now we're
getting ready for glasses and having glasses in the workplace. There's a couple great glasses out there. Google Glass started it, pulled back. Now they're coming back out for business purposes. But there's a number of other glasses out there now, and we're going to start to see those in the workplace.
Wearables.
And, we're going to have to get used to it.
Yep, wearables very, very, very definitely are going to be a big category going forward. Ed, let's go around the horn here. How about you? What do you think in the last 20 years of our doing the show here have been the most pivotal kind of inventions?
Well, I'm going to go with some of the technology like Wi-Fi. Because I remember in 1998 working with executives at EDS and setting up Wi-Fi so that they could take their laptops, as clunky as they were, with their batteries that lasted an hour and a half, and so they can go to a conference room and use the wireless networking that back then under Wi-Fi. That's the technology, and it's still rudimentary, the same. We've gone greater distances. We have better security. Hell, I still have some of my original Cisco PCM CIA cards that we used to slap in the side of the wireless routers. We have it at the computer museum that I keep in my drawer at work, you know. But yeah, I'd say Wi-Fi, you know, because at the time we really didn't call it. We didn't have a name then.
Well, you know what?
We called it wireless internet access.
Go ahead, Gary. Go ahead.
Yeah, I was just going to remind Ed, remember you said PCM CIA?
Yes.
And I haven't heard that in how long. I can't remember the last time I heard that, but I still remember what that stands for.
Oh, please remind me.
Yeah, it stands for People Can't Memorize Confusing Industry Acronyms. Or can't remember. People can't remember confusing industry acronyms.
Well, you just proved that.
I thought meaningless should be in there somewhere.
You know, hey, let me throw this on top of what you've just been saying, Ed. In Barcelona right now with the Mobile World Congress going on, one of the things they're talking about is that 5G, that new wireless system, apparently, is there. And as a matter of fact, there was an article that was online about China made a bold statement about their desire to be the first country with 5G from coast to coast. It was supposed to be South Korea or Japan. This time last year, China Mobile, one of the country's largest telecommunication operators, announced it would be ready for commercial 5G in 2020. But this week, they announced a partnership with Viavi to bring the deadline up by as much as an entire year. This is a huge announcement, as it seems the race is on, and AT&T just announced test cities for 5G in the United States as well. So it looks like this is going to be a reality in much sooner than we ever thought.
Now, what's the advantage of 5G? Is that going to be faster? I'm sure faster, better, stronger, longer distance to the tower.
All those things.
Gaston, I think you probably know more about this than
There's a number of issues. It's better for data transfers and streaming video just because of the protocols that they use, you know, the technical pieces to do it. So it's not just speed, but it's the ability to support the kinds of media over that, and the concept of what's called microcells, in that, you know, we've got microcells in our house, but using the 5G, if you have a microcell in your home or in a basement somewhere, right now, if you move from your microcell to the larger network, you lose your connection. Mm-hmm. You can move from, you know, 4G or LTE into your microcell inside your house.
Oh, I didn't realize
that. It really redefines the way that the mesh network is created technologically.
Well, what, are there any other practical kind of things that are going to happen because of that, Gaston?
I think more, better, faster is enough.
Yeah, I had heard that it's going to...
But it,
Gregor.
It's substantially faster, right? It's going from 100 megabytes per second or hundreds of megabytes per second to 10,000 megabytes per second.
Yeah, wow. And the idea is that the phone carriers are looking for that way to kill Wi-Fi, and there's discussion of, you know, Wi-Fi will continue to exist after that, and I sometimes get on some of those discussions on LinkedIn to be the devil's advocate. Yeah, I can do that.
Cashin, how about you take a crack at what is it that you see?
You know, I definitely the iPhone, but, you know, what I'd like to do is just go through what I ran through in my mind as far as all the things that it may have been conceptualized even back in the times of Leonardo da Vinci as a concept.
Yeah.
But what we've really seen take off in the last 20 years would include GPS, that's 3D true. Printing.
Wow. Yeah.
Social media and the concept of crowdsourcing, you know, the idea of Wikipedia or YouTube where people are able to get on, provide free content that can, you know, go to the masses, but people can collaborate. That's phenomenal because, you know, we're sharing brain cells in a way.
Is that kind of what they call the democratization of the net?
Yeah. That's a good
anybody,
way to put
anywhere,
it.
Anywhere, anyhow, yeah.
But think about virtual reality and then, you know, from an ecosystem, hybrid technology has really taken off in that time. It really didn't exist then. And one of the things that doesn't affect us here in the U.S. very much, but certainly in the third world countries, is clean water. And that technology is just revolutionary.
Yeah.
So that's what I came up with off the top of my head.
Just off the top of your head, my goodness. Well, the question we're asking, and I'm dying to hear what Cal has to say about this, is what do you feel has been the most significant technological change, invention, development in the last 20 years in terms of the effect it's had on history going on? We'll be back with more of that coming up here on the Tech Roundtable on the Internet Advisor.
Now back to the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome back to our Tech Roundtable as we continue on this hour talking about the most important inventions as we look back over 20 years. Cal Carson, who has been our Apple expert all this while, what are your thoughts on that?
You know, I heard all the things that everyone else has talked about makes a lot of sense, and I'm really, really in agreement with that. But the one that pops in my head more than anything else that I think a lot of people don't even worry about is either LCDs or LEDs, because they gave us the ability to have smaller and smaller screens that are brighter and sharper. Yeah. They're on our cell phones, tablets, they're on our computers. You know, by making them smaller and more compact and giving us a better screen to be able to look at things.
And let's not forget about incredible Christmas light displays.
But they help to make a lot of the devices that we use that much easier to look at. Our computers are sharper, our tablets are sharper, our phones are sharper. Even the little displays that you'll find like on refrigerators or other devices, all because of the LEDs. Granted.
No, I was going to say, because you know what you find in your refrigerators is last year's technology that didn't make it onto the tablets, you know.
Yeah, pretty much.
Pretty much. But, I was trying to think if batteries fit in there anywhere, but they don't because battery technology, I mean, we went from nickel cadmium
lithium ion.
Lithium ion, and that's pretty much where we're at now. And
we're stalled.
And we're stalled because of the manufacturing process and contamination of metals within the, you know.
I think we're still waiting for the great leap forward there.
Definitely.
I think there's somebody out there who's going to make that.
Dilithium crystals something, you know. Something.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you saying because...
Couple of the dilithium crystals, yeah.
So are you saying, Foster, because we haven't had anything monumental in some years now that there's something coming?
I think that's going to be a sea change. When you're able to take energy and in some way compress it into a smaller and smaller factor and then make it chargeable, you know, very quickly. I think Elon Musk is heading in that direction with some of the things he's done. I think that, and make it portable, I think that's going to be huge. I think it's going to enable all sorts of things.
One of the things that I've been reading about, and Nikola Tesla experimented with this, but it was the idea of wireless transmission of electricity.
Of electricity, mm-hmm. That's right. That was one of his last great quests, was to do that.
That drove him crazy.
For all intents and purposes, yeah. Right?
The problem with what you're talking about, Foster, with someone compressing power and stuff like that, is going to make Gary upset because it's going to either be Elon Musk or someone like that who is, for lack of a better way to describe it, they'll have to be smart and Apple-like. And because they're going to make that technology and probably be the first to do it, there's going to be a price that's going to go with it. But it's going to be worth the price to pay.
Mm. You know, it's interesting you mentioned that. Did you see the DHL, right, is a big international German
shipping company?
Shipping company.
Yeah.
They are buying into Elon Musk's
driverless trucks?
Or the electronic, this new semi that came out.
The electric semis, yeah.
The electric semi. I mean, in a big way, they're buying into it. And that they see the key thing is going to be the infrastructure, the charging infrastructure. So that if you drive that semi from Detroit to Cleveland and wherever else you need, you're going to have stops along the way where they can charge and charge quickly.
Right.
And in order to make it an effective
And what's going to happen? They're going to come out with something. It's going to have a price point to it.
Yep.
People are going to say, that's a lot of money, but everyone's going to participate in it. And it's never going to go down in price. It'll always go up in price, but it will gain more features. Because you think about it, an iPhone has never gone really down in price.
No.
But it's always gained more features to pay for the new stuff.
Yeah.
So I think it's going to be the same way with power as well.
Hmm. Go ahead, Carson. Carson, pardon me. You're gonna say,
no, it wasn't a well-formed thought, so I'm just going to keep it to myself.
All right.
The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting, I thought during that 20-year period, we got a really good run with printers. Printers became really, really good. True. But the only problem is they got to a point where we didn't need them anymore because no one wanted to have what I call a pulp-based storage system. So everything's on the internet. You just look at it. You look at a PDF, that sort of thing.
Or store it in the cloud.
But over time, from the dot matrix to what it got into as far as laser printers, as far as inkjet printers, they got to be really, really well at what they did.
Yeah.
But,
it's so hard to store all your documents. And maybe it's me that I haven't come up with the technique or the tablets or the manufacturers of my operating system, whether I'm Microsoft or Apple or Android, have come up with a way for me to organize my documents where I can easily find them. Where if I had six pieces of paper on my desk, or I had a stack over there, I could very easily shuffle through those. The tactile, I'm sorry, I'm so old-fashioned, for taking notes and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I
run into the same problem.
I think maybe it's my age. Or?
No, it's because of it's how you've digested information for years and years and years.
Right.
Your search engine is more in here than it is an electronic device.
Yeah. Right.
And working in coordination with paper and that sort of thing, you can search faster that way than you can electronically.
Yeah.
Where the younger generation has become more programmed to the electronic way of doing things,
mm-hmm.
and therefore that's the reason why they embrace it and they can move in that direction faster, which takes me back to Gary's point. Gary was saying that more and more miniaturization and wearables, I think it's going to be more and more implants.
Implantables.
Like, yeah.
Well, I think eventually it'll get to that point.
Oh,
yes.
I think it's going to go there faster than we think because the younger generation doesn't really care about that.
Yep.
The older generation goes like, oh, my God, I don't want to put nothing in my body. Yeah. Where they're going to go like, oh, you can stick this in my head and I can see everything in 3D. Put it in. I think it's going to go that way, and it's going to be that way really quick.
Well, if they can correct my stigmatism at the same time as giving me that, I'm all for it. I mean, if they can put it on my when I get my next cataract surgery, or if I ever get cataracts, and they can put a lens in there that interfaces with my, I'm all for it.
Well,
that's a good point. Yeah,
don't go with cataracts. Get a Rinkin.
A what? A Rinkin?
Oh, come on. We need a drum. We need a rim shot here. Guys, I want to step into something else, and maybe we could just start this.
Okay, wait. That just took me too long to figure out. I got it.
Oh, yeah, it's called a lag or what. You
know, we call that tape delay. You were going to say, Foster.
Yes. I just saw this this week. Researchers at Stanford and the University of Washington are developing technology that allows people to, get this, alter the footage of world leaders like Russian President Vladimir Putin, or Putin rather, and former U.S. or former U.S. President Barack Obama, making them appear to say and do things they've never actually done.
Well, you know, and
now
that,
my question.
Oh, I was gonna say that reminds me of the Forrest Gump movie. Right? When they had Forrest Gump up there and they had him visiting with each of the presidents and talking, and they used old footage, yes, and they did the movie magic to make it look like they were saying something else.
Yep.
It's finally caught up. It's been 10 years or more.
All right. So what are the ethics of developing this kind of software in publicly supported universities? What are the ethics of this?
There's no ethics.
That you can take the literally, though, you can put words into the mouth of world leaders.
What do you mean when you say ethics?
What are the ethics? Is this right to do it? Yes, you can do it.
Well,
is it right? And are we, you know, it's like building bump stocks for AR-15s.
The ethics in it is, where are you, when this stuff has been altered, what is your source for your news? Is it reliable news? Do you trust
the source?
I got a story
about that coming up.
So it's got to be coming through that type of thing. You know, or else it doesn't mean anything.
We all read headlines, you know, and sound bites.
But do you believe every headline? Do you believe every sound bite?
That's the problem.
I don't believe anything anymore. I really don't.
But I think the majority of people believe, I read it on the internet, you know, kind of thing. Gary, what do you think?
Bonjour.
I think it's going to be very difficult. We never could figure out what the real news was, what the real story was before. It was very difficult to do that, and now it's almost impossible.
Yep.
I hate to be cynical, but I don't know how we're going to figure out what's really accurate and what's not.
You know, and that I see as we're looking ahead to the next 20 years of our show, I think that's going to be one of the great challenges is how do you, monitor... How do you, there's a proper term.
Well, you test differentiate the veracity of the news, right?
Pardon me?
And you know, this has been going on for centuries. This isn't anything
new.
You know, Nero was putting out propaganda that somebody else, the Christians, started the fire, right?
Exactly, the burned Rome.
So this fake news has been around since man.
I've got a fake news story coming up here. It's fascinating because it shows the dynamics of creating fake news and how easy it is to do. We'll be back with that and wrapping things up here on our Tech Roundtable on the Internet Advisor. Well, I hope that you've enjoyed this program as much as we have putting it together. And by the way, Kel Carson, thank you so much. Here you're gone for 3 weeks. We bring you back and make you work double hard.
Yeah, well, you know... Ed's been doing such a good job, I had to give him a break.
And you're going to be stepping out again for another 3 weeks.
Yeah, and then I'll be back for another 2 months. So hang in there. I'm going to miss the place, but I will definitely be back.
All right, that's good. Very good. And Ed and Kasten, thank you so much. It's been a lot of fun here. And we're going to be, we have a very special treat for you at the end of the program here. A musical treat for you coming from the Kasten, from Kasten's household, all right? But before we get there, we were talking about false news, and how do you sift through the news? How do you?
I think what you do, if it was my suggestion, or at least the way I try and do it, and I don't even know if it even works because I'll have to, you know, get busted sooner or later. You have to figure out who's your trusted source.
That's it.
And then once you figure out who your trusted source is that you want to trust, then you go with that until they give you a reason not to trust them.
Well, I mean, a lot of people go with, say, my trusted source is CNN or Fox News or MSNBC, and they'll do that. But, you know, trusting Fox News, really?
Well, I think you have to understand the prejudices. You have to understand the bent.
There's a lot of that.
Like people, the polarity for instance, with NPR, people who are more conservative, NPR is a liberal, blah, blah, blah. And I love NPR precisely because it's closer to the sources, I think, in most cases.
And what really is the problem is that nowadays, for some reason or another, we have to label everything.
Yes.
You know, if you could just find one news source out there that everybody agrees is a neutral news source and everyone's okay with, then that would be great.
You don't get advertisers if you do neutral news.
Exactly.
You know, I mean,
but the problem that we have is the polarization because, you know, the concept of confirmatory bias is that we're attracted to those news feeds that reinforce our beliefs about ourselves or those things. So people are polarizing around that. And, you know, we talked about it, just touched on it last week. The Russians weren't trying to affect the election. What they were trying to do is form a discord, because whoever loses now gets to say the whole electoral system is corrupt, because the loser is always going to do that. So
there are, I just want to give you an example of how easy it is, how simple it is. There was an article on the internet I was reading and was talking about Wednesday morning, YouTube's number one trending video was a clip that seemed to push a conspiracy theory that some survivors of the Parkland, Florida school shooting who have called for stricter gun control are actually paid actors. That's the conspiracy theory.
There was one case of someone who did publish a video, and they were pretending to be.
Wait a minute. That may be this case here. Hang on a second. The video of a TV news broadcast that included Parkland student David Hogg carried the description, David Hogg, the actor. That was the description.
Right.
It wasn't the truth, but that was the description.
No, actually, it is the truth. Here's what the deal was that I heard. David Hogg acted in a movie when he lived in California. He now lives in Florida. So they took and they tagged that line onto him. Because it's true, he was an actor, so he has acted.
But it had nothing to do with the news story.
Yes.
And that is, you know, and as we were coming down here, Ed and I were talking about that often when I'm skimming through things, I'll look at headlines. And I use that as kind of a way of deciding whether I'm going to pay attention or dig deeper on it. And this is a way you can poison that kind of thing.
Headlines are just like lawyers when they tell you about contracts. What the large print giveth, the fine print taketh away.
Yeah, very true. Very true.
But I find, YouTube finally took down the video because of the problem with that labeling on it. But isn't that something that the video, that the labeling on it, while you say it may be in some, you know, extraneous way, he was an actor in something, but to label him as an actor meant that it was supporting that whole notion that this is a conspiracy, that these people who are against gun, you know, who are for gun control and in Southland and Parkland are simply shills for the gun control lobby. And I just thought, man, that's all it took was just those four words on the, you know, the runner or the subtitle on it.
Mm-hmm. Because we've become a society, at least in the United States, and probably for a good portion of the world, if they're dealing with electronic information, is that we are, give us a look, you know, it's a Twitter world.
It's give us a little bit.
Give us 140 characters
that,
and we're on our way.
I want it now.
Yeah.
Got to have it now. Got to be the first.
We don't want you to go through the trouble and make sure that, you know, this thing is substantiated and it's true and you've done your homework and dug deep and made sure everything
went. Found three sources and
get it to us as fast as we can.
I remember the old talking heads used to try to deliver news in the 70s and most of the way through the 80s as impartial, just imparting the facts and let the audience make the opinions on the facts given. That doesn't exist very much anymore.
Yeah, it's like the old Fox slogan, fair and balanced. Okay.
All right, guys, let's wrap up the program on a fun kind of note. You folks have probably heard me say and you've seen on our website, I have been celebrating the 20th anniversary of our program here on WJR Radio, our flagship station. And it's on our podcast that we broadcast through the Podcast Detroit Network and also through Michigan Talk Radio. And we have with us the delightful, the effervescent Connie Thomas.
The beautiful, the wonderful.
Oh, yeah, there you go. A few more adjectives. You got to go home tonight.
He's trying to get a warm dinner.
And Connie, welcome to the show. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
One other occasion you did this for us, and we would like you, if you would please, to honor our program as we are wrapping things up here with a song to celebrate the 20th anniversary of our show.
Okay, well, happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary to you. Happy anniversary, Internet Advisor. Happy anniversary to you.
Oh, I love it.
The crowd grows wild.
Available on all tapes and 8-tracks and CDs everywhere.
That was much better than the national anthem last weekend. By what's her name from was the Black Keys?
I don't remember her name, but
I'm drawing a blank
about.
On her name. Oh, my gosh.
I didn't watch it. I just heard that it was bad. So.
Roseanne Barr was better.
Oh, dear.
No.
I won't go that far. I won't go that far.
Tie for last place.
But it was real close. It was real close.
Connie, that was wonderful.
Connie, thank you so much for that. I think it's a fitting note for us to wrap up here our 20th anniversary celebrations this month. Connie, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you. I'm honored that you asked me.
All right. We'll send Kasten home shortly, okay?
Okay.
Thanks, darling.
Thank you.
All right, guys, we're going to be putting our faithful steeds in the barn and thanking everybody for listening to us. By the way, I was just quickly, and I should have done it at the beginning of the program, but I want to salute Vince Mileski, who is our current... he watches out for us on our website. He, this week, spent 3 days on his vacation in the Caribbean remotely fixing our website and getting it back up.
Excellent.
So that by Wednesday, we were back up again, and I was absolutely helpless. And matter of fact, he had had to go into a number of things on the WordPress site to finally get it to work. And Vince, thank you so much. Visual Compass is the name of his company, and we'll make sure that we have a link to that on our homepage as well. So, Vince, you rescued us here, and thus we set sail into the next 20 years or 20 minutes, who knows? Thank you so much for joining us here on the Internet Advisor, Foster Brown. For Gary Baker, Ed Rudell, Kasten Thomas, and also Mr. Cal Carson, the Internet Advisor crew on the air for you.
You've been listening to the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally-produced computer show, with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and our team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or find the show notes for this podcast, visit InternetAdvisor.net. And look for us on Facebook and Twitter. Don't forget to check the other great podcasts available on this PodcastDetroit.com network. Thank you for listening.